discussing how contractors can finish strong and finish well when they decide to exit their business. This is the Contractor Succession Podcast.
Welcome back to the Contractor Succession Podcast. I'm Marty Wolf, and with me is my partner in Contractor Succession, and that is Scott Good. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Marty. Great to be back.
It is great to be back. We had a lot of fun in the first one, our intro show. So we have a lot of things we want to talk about. We have to kind of narrow it down, don't we? Because there's a lot of things related to this contractor succession business that we have, and we've learned so much in the last couple of years, so we want to share some of what we learned with our audience. Let's start this way. You blogged an article titled Intangible Assets, and that's on our website, a blog page, and our website is contractorsuccession.com. So talk to me about intangible assets. What did you write about, Scott?
Well, you know, I think the best way to start that conversation is to talk about what tangible assets are, and that was kind of how I structured that blog, because I think to be able to understand what the intangible sides are, you need to understand what the tangible things are first. So the tangible assets really are things like, you know, your profit. There are things like when you look at your balance sheet, your assets that show up on that balance sheet, your vehicles, your tools, your inventory, your receivables, all those kinds of things. And so those are the things that you can actually place a value on. And so when somebody's going to do a valuation, they can just pull up the balance sheet and there's the numbers, voila.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff, the intangible things are a lot, you know, I call it fuzzier or less definable,
mm-hmm.
and more subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that when you and I are looking at a business, we have to pay a lot closer attention to, because it's not something we can pull off of a balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
These are the things like their leadership and management. You know, if they're a company that does maintenance agreements, what that recurring revenue, or if they have an ongoing client that they deal with, what kind of recurring revenue can they count on? How they manage their employees, their inventory control, cash flow.
Yeah, cash flow and employee retention is, I think you just mentioned that. That's
yeah.
A critical part of it. And when we look at organizations, and again, the leadership and management is not just the owners. It's we look at the entire group, correct?
In fact, it's more. It really is not the owners, because ultimately, when we're looking at evaluation, the thought process is that owner is either moving away at some point in time or selling and leaving immediately. And so what does it look like without that owner? And has he or she been able to establish some leadership in their wake to be able to take over the business when they walk away?
Hmm. Right. And so tangible and intangible assets, when we look at a company and we go, we do a deep dive on the organization, both the financials and the employees, and we look at all those kinds of things, and we give people feedback in our assessment. So one of the things, there's two more things we're going to hit today, but we hear these things repeatedly for the last couple of years. One of them, I guess I'll call it succession options, succession options. And most people don't realize that they do have so many options. I mean, most of the businesses we talk to are family-owned businesses. And if there's family members in the business, then that probably is the natural place that they would go. And our experience has told us that. It's a son, a daughter, a brother, or whatever, right? But there are other options that they can, you know, exit their businesses gracefully. Let's talk a little bit about some other options that they have when they decide they want to exit their business.
Yeah, and you know, and you mentioned gracefully, and just because it's family doesn't mean there's anything graceful about that either.
That's true, brother. Yes.
We've seen lots of dysfunction in families, including my own, I would say.
yeah, you're right there. That may not have been the right choice of words, but you picked up on that. I got it.
So, you know, even with family, ultimately, it's a transition in some cases. It may not be an outright sale. You know, oftentimes people think of, you know, this succession thing. They're looking at selling to an outside entity, which is an option.
Right.
But more, I would say probably more than half of the time, we're dealing with somebody in the organization already that has an interest in being able to take over, and the owner is interested in being able to set it up for a transition slash sale to that one, two, three, or more individuals. You know, sometimes it's handled as an ESOP, which is an employee stock option program, which is a little bit more dicey and a little bit more a lot more legal than just a transition to one or two people. But lots of organizations have been structured to be able to transition that to an employee, an existing employee, a key leader that's in the organization already. And so trying to help an owner be able to handle that properly so there's something of value when that owner walks away from the business.
Right. So it could be a trusted longtime associate or a trusted long-term associates that have worked with the owner and have proven themselves, if you will, as good business people, as good people, someone who the owner feels comfortable with. So that could turn into a strategy or a plan to exit. And there's different ways you can do that. And sometimes the owner can hold ownership. Sometimes they can pass it on over time. So there's different options that I, you know, here's one thing that a lot of people don't talk about, kind of related to that. But the fact is that maybe they don't want to give it up yet. And maybe there's financial reasons why they don't. Sometimes you can have a manager, a trusted, solid manager, maybe already worked for you, or possibly even bringing in a manager that can run that business. Is that another option that they have?
Well, and often that has to be the case, because what is currently in the organization, the way the owner may have structured it, was that he or she was making all the decisions, was pulling all the strings, doing everything. And so there may not be an individual in the company that's capable of running it once the owner decides to pull out. So, you know, that's a real option that sometimes you may have to go out and find an outside individual that will either manage it on behalf of somebody who wants to purchase it, or that he or she himself or herself want to buy in at some point in time. So you may be looking outside for a manager that would come in, learn the business, and then with the ultimate goal of selling it to them.
So you are listening to the Contractor Succession Podcast. I'm Marty Wolf, and the one who's sounding really smart is my partner, Scott Good. Keep up the good work for the rest of this podcast, Scott. You're really sounding smart. So let's add something else to the succession options. I mean, we talk about and we explain this option that sometimes there is what's commonly called a strategic buyer. That is, I would interpret that, so give me a little more, someone who may want to buy your company because it's a right market. It could be the services that you're offering. It could be you have this incredible customer list. So an outside buyer may say, wow, this is a great opportunity to expand my business. Is that an okay description of a strategic buyer, or do you have something to add?
No, I think I think we're seeing that a lot more. In fact, I have a friend of mine who has a business in the New Hampshire, Boston area, and he purchased this company about 4 or 5 years ago. And he and I are in some discussions, and actually we're part of a peer group, and we're going to be talking about that. For him, he's interested in buying 3 or 4 more businesses to add to his. Mm-hmm. His already successful business in the Boston market.
So he's
and that happens with, you know, there are consolidators, there are franchisers that come in and do similar stuff to that, and venture capitalists, people who just are looking. There's a lot of, you know, these Harvard MBA guys that come out and want to purchase a business, and will look in a specific area that has a strategic market like you're talking about, that will come in, and you can actually get possibly a little bit more than what your business is worth when somebody is in it for a specific marketplace or a target type business.
Right. And then, of course, the option is that if you're tired and you want to go fast, possibly, then there is the good old fashioned business broker. And certainly that's an option. And some, maybe all business brokers can give you a valuation of your business, and you can decide from there. Now, what we always preach, and it's part of our thing, if you will, at Contractor Succession, is to look long term. To, you know, think about what's this going to look like 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the road, so that you can prepare to exit gracefully. I use that word again, and happy and financially appropriate for the time that you put in. I'll mention again that it saddens both of us when we see people who have worked so hard, you know, 20, 30, 40 years of their life, and just don't have a plan to get out of it. That's a shame. You've worked hard, but it takes time to prepare your business for sale or transition. So I guess that leads me to the whole idea of valuation, because, boy, that's a hot topic with our clients, isn't it?
And in this blog I wrote up, you know, I mentioned that a lot of owners confuse income or profit with a value. Mm. And so just because a business is making money doesn't mean it's worth a lot on the open market. Again, I get back to that scenario with the owner who pulls all the strings and makes all the decisions. It might be making a lot of money, but it has no systems in place, no recurring revenue, nothing that's really transferable to a buyer. One of the things you and I are very focused on is that's all well and good that you're making a whole bunch of money, but if that can't be transferred to somebody else, then the business isn't worth much. And so we focus a lot on creating value in the organization.
Right. Let me jump in because, yeah, you could be making money because you haven't invested a dime, you know, for the last year or two, and you're reaping the profits because you're not reinvesting anything. And so if you have an established business, you're making some money, that's great. It looks like that. But a buyer coming in is going to look and say, well, you know, you don't have any systems. You don't have dispatch software. You don't have your accounting systems or the back of the envelope, for goodness sake, right? So, I mean, potentially can be showing a quote-unquote net profit, but a buyer is going to look at it in a more global point of view, correct?
Yeah, and let me just do a real quick example and try to you know, pull all these pieces together on this valuation thing with the income versus the value. So let's, for argument's sake, say that a company is averaging net cash flow on an annual basis of, you know, $500,000. Let's just throw it out there and say $500,000. And but they're doing it all on the backs of the owner and a couple people, but no systems. And that business, while it's a great annual income, when we put a multiplier on that based on those intangible assets we talked about earlier, that multiplier might be really low. And so when you take the cash flow times that multiplier, let's just say the multiplier is only a 1.5. So that $500,000 in cash flow made that business value only worth $750,000. Mm-hmm. Whereas if the multiplier was much higher because those intangible things were really solid, that multiplier could potentially be a 3. And so now that $500,000 times 3, the business is now worth $1.5 million. So we just doubled the value of the business for a sale just by making sure that they had put things in place that make it more valuable to a potential buyer.
Right. And even when we present to our clients or our prospects, you know, we have that whole value proposition laid out. We lay out a plan for 3 to 5 years and say, if you do this, if you do that, if you do this, you do that, and this is what this should look like. And we put that whole return on investment thing that you put together, which is just brilliant. It looks great. It makes sense. And it's easy for people to see, well, if I, in fact, you know, improve the systems and do the things that we recommend them to do, it will definitely bring value. There's no question about that. The other thing that I just popped into my brain, if you'll allow me, is that there are good and not so good times to sell any business. And so a buyer should also be thinking of that. If times are good and people have disposable incomes, it may be a good time to sell any business. If you're in the middle of a depression or things are bad or whatever, it may not be a good time to do to sell that business. Now, on the other hand, you can't actually forecast that, but you can be prepared for that. You can do some of the things that we recommend in contractor succession so that if it's not a quote-unquote good time to sell, you can wait for 6 months or a year or 2 years so that the timing is better. Do you agree with me, Scott?
Yeah, and you're right. You know, there were a whole recession thing. Obviously, in a good market, it tends to create a little bit more buzz. But, you know, buyers also are looking for deals, too. And so,
correct.
It depends. There are people that wait too long to pull the trigger, and then instead of being able to do it on their terms, they're forced to do it on the terms of, I got to get out of this thing. My health is either not good, or I've got a family member I got to take care of, or I've lost my zeal for the business, and I'm ready to roll. If they haven't been preparing that properly, then they're going to be forced to take a deal that they may not, may not be advantageous to them.
So make it advantageous for you, Mr. Business Owner, HVAC contractors, and contact us, contractorsuccession.com, contractorsuccession.com. Everything you need to know about us is there. You can contact us through that page. You can see a little survey or a little questionnaire that can start the discussion with us. We check that all the time. There's our blog is there. Scott does most of that work. And now we have our podcast that's up on our website. It's a great website and explains everything that we do. So
And Marty, let me just add one thing too. We also have a Facebook page, and we've got all kinds of videos and other, you know, tidbits of information. That our goal is to educate. You know, while we'd love to work with people, educating them is probably the best way. We secure business because I think once they start looking at the things that they see, we know they're going to realize how little they know, and see value in working with somebody who can wrap this whole thing up all into one nice package.
And we said it in the first one, we should probably say it here. One of the reasons that we're successful in this business is because your deep experience. You are an owner-operator of a successful HVAC business, and you've been doing this for a long time. You and I have worked together for a long time. I have made a small contribution to your work at Goodco Mechanical, and we learned, and we've had some wins and losses, but we've gone through all of that. So that gives us some real insights into what's going on in your business and your industry. And again, I've done succession business planning for several businesses in several different industries. So, Scott, another great show. I appreciate your time, man, as always.
As always, a great day. Thank you.